That's all the time we have for this week's Senior Concerns program. If you want to hear more from these publications or others like them, you will find them in their entirety on Audio Reader's Telephone Reader Service. Call 1-800-772-8898 for more information. I'm Deb Turpin. Thanks for joining me.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 74 and partly cloudy. Tonight, thunderstorms with a low in the upper 60s. Then, tomorrow, thunderstorms with a high in the upper 90s. Tomorrow night, thunderstorms with a low in the low 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Coronavirus updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil Sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's Oil Report for Sunday, June 14th. New report highlights best practices in reducing flaring. The story was written by Mella McEwen. For several years, the Environmental Defense Fund has studied flaring and methane emissions in the Permian Basin, issuing reports detailing how the region leads in both flaring and methane emissions. Last week, the environmental group, along with Gaffney Klein, issued a report that instead focused on best industry practices to eliminate flaring in the Permian Basin. Quote, "We've been engaged on flaring since the beginning of the great shale boom," said Colin Layden, Director, Regulatory and Legislative Affairs at Environmental Defense Fund, during a webinar to discuss the report. While the organization has been issuing reports on the large amounts of flaring and methane emissions in the Permian and the environmental harm being done, Layden said this report highlights possible solutions and how some companies are prioritizing the issue and making investments to mitigate or eliminate flaring in the region. Quote, "There are top-tier operators in the Permian Basin with respect to flaring techniques, compared with the average of 2.7% flaring," said Jennifer Stewart, Carbon Management Strategy and Policy Lead at Gaffney, Klein & Associates, during the webinar. The report detailed the operations of Chevron, EOG Resources, Occidental Petroleum, Parsley Energy, and Pioneer Natural Resources. Using public data from Texas and New Mexico regulatory agencies, Stewart, the report's author, said they wanted to find out, how did they get these results? Was there a silver bullet? What was the answer? She said what emerged were three main themes: a strong governance and corporate culture with regards to flaring, a strong commitment to reduce or eliminate flaring by not putting wells online without the takeaway infrastructure in place beforehand, and best-in-class practices to ensure flare functionality and reduced vapor emissions. That corporate culture must extend from the boardroom down to the field level, so that when a field operator must make a decision about flaring, that decision will reflect the corporate culture, Stewart said. Tying compensation metrics to flaring performance and making flaring goals public increases accountability, she said. If there is a silver bullet, she said, it is to not flare at all. While takeaway capacity often has been cited as a reason flaring in the Permian Basin has increased, she said that should not be a barrier, but a constraint that should be addressed by ensuring takeaway infrastructure is in place before a well is placed into production, and the willingness to shut in a well until that infrastructure is available. That requires strategic, long-term planning and communication, not just within the company, but with the producer's midstream partner, Stewart said. While she said some flaring may be required because of operational upsets, high gas line pressure, or safety reasons, the companies with best practices use trained staff or contractors to routinely and frequently check flares to ensure the equipment is functioning properly and emissions monitors and controls are incorporated into facilities design. They also install vapor recovery units at most, if not all, pad sites to achieve maximum emissions capture efficiency, she said. Quote, it's a clear bridge to beneficial financial impact. It has financial statement impact, protecting cash flow, it's risk mitigation, offering long-term investment stability, and maintains the social license to operate. And it opens access to capital markets, facilitating access to capital markets, lowers the bank risk profile, and possibly drives a premium to multiples, she said. Jeff Gustafson, Vice President of Chevron's North America Exploration and Production Mid-Continent Business Unit, said during the webinar that the issue of flaring is garnering not only a lot of attention inside the company, but outside the company from its external stakeholders. Quote, especially the investor community, he said. More and more we get questions not just about flaring, but about our environmental performance overall. That's true of the company, of the industry, and what we do in the Permian Basin. In the Permian Basin, flaring is a significant issue, he said. Look at the volumes last year. The amount is staggering and growing. The environmental impact is real. The economic impact is real. We're burning a lot of product that has value. End quote. As Stewart wrote in the report, Gustafson said addressing flaring requires planning, foresight, and investment. Quote, it's a manageable problem, he said. The best proof of that is the five companies Jennifer spoke to. These are companies large and small. This isn't a big company issue. It's not a small company issue. Companies are managing because they plan appropriately. The economics are not insurmountable, even in the last year, when gas prices went negative for periods of time. You don't need that high of a natural gas price in the Permian to make some of the investments necessary and make some of these actions economic, but you have to plan. End quote. The commitment has to come from the top, he said, with making the issue a priority, setting targets, communicating that throughout the company, and forming partnerships across the value chain, he said. Dave Macarone, the managing director, J.P. Morgan Asset Management, said that when his firm evaluates energy stocks, quote, we also evaluate the sustainability factors. We see economic waste in gas flaring. When we talk best practices, the Permian can be one of the lowest cost environments in extraction costs globally, and the highest return on capital in the world. End quote. It is important for his company and other investors to support policymakers, legislators, and regulators as they craft regulations that support the elimination of routine flaring, Macaroni said. Quote, voluntary actions have not delivered the change we're talking about. We have to realize the oil and gas industry as a whole faces a variety of risks in maintaining their social license to operate, he said. That will come into question over time if industry performance does not improve. Zero routine flaring will result in reduced costs as well as delivering environmental benefits. The world is changing, and because of those changes, it will drive company operations and stock valuations. End quote. Layden said routine flaring needs to end entirely. Quote, to put flaring in the rearview mirror, we need concrete measures, which will require strong regulatory bodies like the Railroad Commission, he said. Quote, the EDF believes if we're going to tackle this problem and bring everyone along, we need to set a strong goal of where we want to get with flaring, a sort of North Star to guide us, Layden said. Ultimately, it will be agencies like the Railroad Commission to adopt policies to eliminate flaring in Texas and a roadmap to get us there. It's ambitious. It's achievable. A lot of companies are committed to zero or near zero emissions. There are probably a lot of policy options along the way. Quote, the industry panel, Railroad Commission Chairman Wayne Christian, has asked for recommendations. It will be interesting to see if there's something there that's a real start. It's great to see J.P. Morgan stepping up on this, he said. My sense is investors are asking tough questions of the oil and gas sector on environment, social, and governance. It's good for shareholder value, good for their license to operate, good for the environment, and good for their clients. I'm cautiously optimistic. As asset managers look at flaring, it will be a chance for a tangible difference. End quote. Gustafson said the current downturn offers a chance for infrastructure to catch up and reduce the need for flaring. Quote, we're in a downturn, but the Permian will be back in a big way, he said. We need to take this opportunity in this unique environment to keep the momentum going so we come out of this downturn in a better place. Quote, I'd be very disappointed to come out of this cycle with the Permian ramping up investment and not make significant progress on this issue, he said. 3D reality capture can simplify upgrades of oil gas facilities. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Three-dimensional seismic technology helped unlock more subsurface secrets for oil and gas operators. Now, 3D technology can be used in scanning, a cutting-edge technology that engineers can use to plan upgrades to oil and gas assets virtually. Quote, 3D reality capture is honestly suited for all types of oil and gas assets, Mark Franklin, account manager, design and reality capture lead at Kleinfelder, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Kleinfelder is an engineering, construction management, design, and environmental professional services company. Franklin, an authority on 3D scanning, who uses a number of different technologies for modeling, says his company typically uses the scanners on tripods, but the scanners can also be attached to drones or robotic devices to scan areas difficult to access. Quote, typically, a person will set up the scanner in many different locations to capture all areas and angles of what we want information on, and then we stitch and register all of those scanned locations together to create one large virtual model, he said. Depending on the desired quality and detail of the scan, each scan takes anywhere from 3 to 8 minutes to complete, and we can complete 100% of scans within a day using multiple cameras at the same time to capture large swaths of areas, end quote. Using a computer or connected device, engineers can then see through walls or underground to perfectly chart pipe systems and other elements of infrastructure that are typically hidden. Quote, since you can overlay scans on top of each other, we can timestamp scans so that if we scan at one point in time when something is exposed, underground piping or open walls, and then scan it after it has been covered, you would be able to virtually go through the wells or underground and see those assets, end quote. Such 3D cameras are relatively available, but industrial-grade units are still quite expensive, he said. The cameras his company used cost upward of $125,000 with all the equipment and software required. Quote, the cameras we use are accurate to more or less 1 millimeter at a 350-meter distance away from the object, so we can capture a high level of detail from far away, he said. Franklin said when his company began utilizing the tool, they started using it on facilities with aging infrastructure where existing drawings and information were hard to find. Quote, teaching our own engineers and designers how to complete the reality capture allowed us to be fit for purpose and only capture what was required for the work we were completing, he said in the email. Continuing the quote, within a matter of hours, we could capture highly accurate and detailed information that would be utilized to assist with our designs. Therefore, a lot of the areas we initially captured were small portions of the facilities, end quote. When clients saw how quickly areas could be captured by the scans, quote, it quickly started to grow to where we often are asked to scan entire facilities to create full virtual reality models. We have scanned some of the largest oil facilities in the world over the last few years, as well as many smaller facilities for a lot of midstream clients where access to certain sites is difficult, and therefore having a virtual model they can access becomes valuable and a big cost savings, he said. Once a 3D model has been completed, Franklin said those models can be shared online via the cloud on its WebShare service. Quote, this gives the clients and owners the ability to log in and fly through the full models of their facilities, he said. With these models, we can add tagging and links to any data that the client may have. Therefore, with a piece of equipment, for example, we can tag that equipment and add links to where all the information for that piece of equipment is located. That could be the drawings, maintenance schedules, and any other information they may have. It also includes linking to the operations panel that would show live information on what is currently happening with that equipment. There is no limit to what you can link into the model, and therefore you can start to build this virtual model to link it with any live or non-live piece of information, end quote. Franklin said in his email he doesn't see any barriers to oil and gas clients utilizing 3D scanning technology, saying the information provided is similar to what oil and gas companies receive through computer-assisted drafting models and drawings. But the information used to create the models is highly more accurate and clearer, he said. Quote, one area that has been a challenge, however, is when we start doing full facilities, since the amount of data we are collecting becomes very large, which can put stress on the information technology infrastructure, he wrote. Quote, but we have been able to manage this using many of the new cloud-based solutions to house this large amount of data. This was a learning curve for us, since the data that we started collecting became huge over a short period of time. We can typically manage that for our clients, but if a client or owner was to take this on themselves, that would be one area that needs to be looked at beforehand. End quote.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, June 14th, 2020. The Economist. A Modest Uptick by Emre Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. The most recent U.S. jobs report brought a gain of 2.5 million jobs in May and a decrease in the unemployment rate from 14.7% to 13.3%. It's an important positive signal, particularly given that many analysts were anticipating losses of another 8 million or more. However, the situation remains challenging and fluid, and the recovery will likely be bumpy. There are two countervailing forces in the job market. Many companies are continuing to struggle and lay off workers, while initial weekly jobless claims have fallen substantially from peak levels. They are still three times as high as the previous record set during the 2008 recession. Simultaneously, as the economy reopens, some of the most labor-intensive segments, such as retail, bars and restaurants, and personal services, are hiring in large numbers. On balance, there was improvement in overall employment in May. This pattern is certainly encouraging and consistent with our earlier assessment that because there were no major structural problems in the economy, it could recover more rapidly than in 2008, when it took 58 months to restore job losses. It is important, however, to keep things in perspective. The U.S. lost more than 20 million jobs in April and gained about 2.5 million in May, so there remains an enormous gap to bridge. Much has been made of the fact that May brought the largest monthly gain ever recorded. While this statement is accurate, the increase restores only a fraction of the unprecedented prior loss. We may see some additional large net gains over the ensuing months, given the dynamics of reopening, but this pace will not persist indefinitely. In addition, subsequent data releases may well present a different picture. Job gains are based on a survey of establishments and could be notably revised downward in the next benchmarking if the number of operating locations has dropped. The unemployment rate is based on a survey of households, and there may have been some individuals who were classified as employed who were not working due to COVID-19 closures. If these people had been instead counted as unemployed on temporary layoff, the overall unemployment rate would have been several percentage points higher, although the direction of movement should be similar. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has acknowledged this issue. It should take about 2 years to return to prior peak levels, even with no major additional disruptions. Health and safety remain of paramount concern, and progress will depend on the ability to continue to resume activity without creating an additional spike in infections that will necessitate a new wave of restrictions. Even with these caveats, the fact that the job market is showing signs of recovery is clearly great news. Be safe. Wave Three Down Begins by Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. So despite watching our cities burn down on the evening news reports, the stock and oil markets follow their own course. Markets are soaring despite the negative mood on television and lost businesses to mob violence. This is a dangerous combination in defiance of social mood theory. Be careful out there. End comment, last week's column. In reading two newspapers this morning, I find only one correct headline. Dow plunges 1,861 points as optimism evaporates. After 900 points up last Friday, supposedly due to 2.5 million jobs created, the media is at a loss to explain Thursday's drop of double those points. The better explanation is that wave two up is finally complete. Wave three down began this past Wednesday. Ralph Elliott, a professional accountant, formed his Elliott Wave theory of mass behavior in the 1930s. It is a three steps one way, two steps back the other explanation of mass psychology. Wave one down, February 12th through March 23rd, dropped 11,000 points in a few weeks, supposedly over the virus. The purpose of a wave two up is to restore confidence. This happened in a big way with the NASD recovering 100% of its fall. But those two waves are complete, and wave three, the strongest of the five, is upon us. Believe the theory or not, it makes a lot more sense than lurching from one news report to another, attempting to explain the markets. Wave three will likely last until mid-July. Given the strength of its start this week, it would not be surprising to see the previous low of Dow Jones 18,000 revisited. Fed Chair Jerome Powell actually believes he is completely in charge of setting interest rates. The Fed follows the market, which sets rates. Expect rates to climb. They are already. The reason will be fear of default. One cruise line is paying 12% for borrowed money already. Numerous retail and shale producers are either now in or contemplating bankruptcy. Default fears amid mass deflation stalks the markets. Crude oil prices have stair-stepped down the past 12 years, hitting high of 140, 110, 80, and this past week, 40. The XLE Energy ETF has dropped 17% in the last 4 days. Much lower prices for energy shares lie ahead. Please disavow yourself of the idea that there are safe stocks in this environment. A prime example is well-run Cullen Frost Bank CFR, which is down 16% this week. XLE and CFR are falling twice as fast as the overall market. The overall market is still held up by a handful of tech stocks with outsized weighting in the indexes. Already, many individual stocks are sent to disappear as Pier 1 did last week. Our closing observation last week, markets defy social theory, foretold a total breakdown of authority in Seattle. Protesters have formed the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, CHAZ, occupying a former police station. They have called for free everything, college, rent, you name it, and have barricaded their own enclave. Authorities there let this happen. These same events played out from 1968 through 1974. This time, China is a far more formidable adversary than the Soviet Union ever was. Risk is high as the world is being remade. Europe pulls back. The U.S. is uncertain. China marches ahead with its own new infrastructure, investment bank, and military.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 73 and partly cloudy. Tonight, thunderstorms with a low in the upper 60s. Then, tomorrow, thunderstorms with a high in the upper 90s. Tomorrow night, thunderstorms with a low in the low 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, June 14th, 2020. Section B. Life and Times, OAOA.com. Master Gardeners, Plants Need Friends Too, Consider Companion Gardening, by Phyllis Price, Master Gardener. Companion gardening is very similar to the way individuals react with each other. Have you ever met someone to whom you knew you had an instant connection?